Welcome to the Chronic Podcast with host Ralph Malvro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicle. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
I don't even have a joke, Dave. Dave smells like nougat. Now here's your host, Ralph Malvro.
All right, welcome to the Chronic Podcast. As always, we're sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge. You should support them because they support us. All right, Andrew got a fantastic guest. You know him, Stan Verrett, ESPN SportsCenter, 1 a.m. if you're on the East Coast, 11 p.m. if you're on the West Coast. Stan is nice enough to join us because he is a die-hard, crazy Saints fan. Stan, I don't know if people know this. You still go to the Saints home games and road games, even though you're out on the West Coast. Is that correct?
That's correct. Section 336 in the Superdome. I'm there every Sunday for home games. I usually make a select few road games. You know, I got a lot of friends in Atlanta. I got friends in Tampa, so I usually go to those games. So I average about, I would say, 9 to 10 games per season. Sometimes I'll miss a Thursday or a Monday, you know, at home. But Super Bowl year is my record. I made 14 of the 19 games in the 2009 season. And, you know, obviously for All Saints fans, it's, you know, greatest season ever. So I wanted to, once I felt like they were gonna go all the way, I wanted to go to as many of those games as possible so I could have all those memories, you know.
Stan, when did you know when 2006 and Sean Payton and Drew Brees got it, when did you know as a Saints fan, obviously, because you're originally from New Orleans, so you know all the history. When did you know that you're like, oh my God, this is different. This is a team that can win a Super Bowl. Was there a certain time where as a, just a fan, it sort of hit you?
I went up to the Saints played in Oakland in a preseason game, 2009 season. It just absolutely decimated the Raiders. But I went as a guest of the team, and you know, I was there with Rita LeBlanc and with Mickey Loomis, and I was sitting talking to Mickey, and I told him, I said, look, I've been a Saints fan since I was a kid, and I don't ever remember a roster being this talented. I said, I don't know who you're going to cut, but you're going to have to cut some guys who are pretty good. And throughout the Saints history, that's just never been the case. I mean, they still needed players when the regular season began, much less cutting talented players off the roster. And I told Mickey that day. I said, I think this is a Super Bowl team. This is as good a team as the Saints have ever had. And, I mean, I think this team has everything it takes to go all the way, you know. And I saw him, you know, after the game, after the Super Bowl win. I said, I told you in the preseason. but I actually started to feel the vibe that, you know, that might be right. After the game against Miami, they got him to 7-0 in Miami. And that great comeback after they got down, and they came back and beat the Dolphins, and, you know, the Super Bowl was in Miami, and I have a buddy who does a pregame show for the Dolphins, and I told him, I said, I got a feeling I'm going to be back here in January, and so, or February, whenever it was, and so February, yeah, so he said, really? I said, yes, you know, 7-0, man, you know, this team just keep finding a way to win. And so I got back to work, and I said, look, I'm going to need the whole week off following the Super Bowl. So the guy who does our schedules for SportsCenter, he's like, hey, man, so you got a feeling about the Saints. I guess that's what it is. I'm like, yeah, and I just want to be prepared because if they win it, I'm going to need the full week.
Stan, off-season questions about the Saints. When you saw Jimmy Graham got traded, maybe because you're an ESPN guy, you got it ahead of us or whatever, but when you saw it, what was your initial reaction to it?
Look, you can't argue with what Jimmy produced on the field. I mean, he was, you know, he was a big part of the offense. But if you look at, you know, some of those key games that people cite all the time when they talk about him, I mean, there are games, big games, where he didn't produce as much as he would have liked to. Now, I'm sure behind the scenes there may have been some injuries involved with that. Teams were certainly game planning to try to take him out. But I think if you look back at last season, the game in Pittsburgh where Drew Brees throws 5 touchdown passes to 5 different receivers, and Graham not only didn't have a touchdown, he didn't have a catch in that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when the Saints brass looked at that, they're like, okay, you know, this offense can function without him. And then it became, okay, what kind of value can we get? Okay, so then they got first place center, position of need on the team, because, you know, that rush was just right in Breeze's face all season last year. Okay, so you get that sorted out. And then with, you know, some of the cap flexibility you have, you can go out, you get Browner, you get Spiller, you know, and then you get a draft pick. I mean, so it's, if you look at it as a 4-for-1 in that way, I mean, it's hard to argue with it. Now, I also happen to be very bullish on Josh Hill. I think he's a great athlete who I think is really going to surprise people this season with what he can do in that offense. And I think Spiller is going to be phenomenal. I mean, I don't know if there's a better fit for the Saints offense than C.J. Spiller. I mean, he can run the Pierre Thomas plays. He can run the Darren Sproles plays. He can run the Reggie Bush plays. I mean, he can do a lot of what needs to be done in that offense. Mm-hmm. And him and Ingram.
The Saints really were missing a back like that last year.
And Stan, yeah, you're exactly right. We had Mike Dettillier on. We've had Heath Evans on. And I think they both said C.J. Spiller is maybe the biggest key to the Saints' offseason because he fills the matchup void that Jimmy Graham did, that Reggie Bush did. So, I mean, I think you're right on. I think C.J. Spiller is a huge key to the Saints' prospects in 2016. What do you think about Rob Ryan with Dennis Allen coming back? Is that a powder keg that we should worry about?
I hope not. But I mean that secondary last year, I mean, it was just abysmal. I mean, it started with Patrick Robertson, and then it was Corey White. I mean, they lost games literally. I mean, like not very often in games can you just point to a single play and say, okay, that's why they lost the game. But there were plays like that over and over and over again. And look, the pass rush wasn't what it needed to be oftentimes, but there were other just serious breakdowns in the secondary. The loss to Detroit with the whiff against Golden Tate, and he goes in for a touchdown, and then the third and long against the Bengals with AJ Green, and then the fiasco with Kaepernick scrambling around and throwing up what looked like a punt, you know, for a completion in a game that should have been put away, you know. So the secondary, I mean, hey, look, Dennis Allen was there Super Bowl year. Is that correct? 2009.
That's right.
You know, so anybody you can bring back from that year, I'm good with it. You know, look, Darren Sharper made a lot of plays back there, and some of that is just his natural ball hawking ability. I mean, you know, he's one of the great free safeties of all time in terms of interceptions and his ability to make plays on the ball. Now, you know, Jarris Bird, you know, had those similar skills in Buffalo. He displayed the same thing. And so I don't know how much of Sharper's success was related to Dennis Allen, but I like the fact that you have a guy with that sort of ability, that sort of proven ability, who is very much like what Darren Sharper was when he came to the Saints, but a little younger, and with the coach who helped create that.
Yeah. Well, Stan, I want to ask you something
turnovers were such a key to that season. That's what they have to do now. And a part of that is pass rush, but a part of that is just making plays on the ball. And so many times the secondary, you know, I'm yelling, turn around, turn around. If the guy just turns around and makes a play on the ball, it's an interception. But they're running with their hands up, and it's either a completion or a face guarding penalty, or, you know, a pass interference penalty.
Yeah. Well, I want your perspective, and hey, this is Andrew from Saints Nation, and thank you so much, by the way, for your support the last couple of years on Twitter and everything. It's been awesome. But I want to ask your perspective, take a step back real quick. And as a fan, and you're a little bit older than me, but growing up as a fan in the early 80s, and really my first memories were, you know, the 86 and the 87 season, which was the first playoff season. And Ralph and I both, I mean, we're kind of like you. We were Saints fans out of the womb. But we have a lot of new Saints fans, and, you know, as a blogger, so going to high school, when I was going to high school, and I'm sure you experienced this some too, I mean, the Cowboys and the Niners were winning Super Bowls, and so many of the kids I went to high school with were fans of those teams. And as a Saints fan, that was so disheartening to me because I felt like, how could you not be a Saints fan being here in New Orleans? And now you fast forward to now, you know, and as a blogger that's out there and kind of experiencing the fan base, you see guys popping up out of Asia, out of Africa, out of the Netherlands, out of Europe. I mean, all over the place. I mean, the Saints have really become, and obviously success breeds fans, but it's really become an international brand. And that's pretty cool for someone like me who in the 80s experienced fans, people in his own hometown that weren't supportive of the Saints. And so curious, I mean, you kind of have an even larger perspective on that being – both a kid that grew up in New Orleans as a Saints fan, but also now working in international media. So curious what you think about all that.
Well, first of all, I think Katrina contributed to a lot of that like people really got to know New Orleans and by extension got to know the Saints during Katrina and what the team means to the community and the bond that was there. And then I think, you know, people were just rooting for our city in general. You know, there was just this groundswell. I mean, it was so sad, and so many people dealt with so many bad things, you know, with that I think there was this groundswell of support for just New Orleans in general, because I think people who visit New Orleans realize how special it is very quickly. And so I think people were rooting for us. And so, you know, by extension, they began rooting for the Saints. And then, you know, Saints have had, you know, such good guys. You know, Drew Brees is easy to root for. You know, Marcus Colston is easy to root for. You know, and, you know, there was a whole bounty thing, but by and large, you know, the Saints have been a team of guys who are easy to root for, and I think that contributed to it, especially with Drew as the face of the franchise. You know, so, but man, I tell you, there were some days when I was a kid, that 1-15 season, I went to every single game.
Oh, wow.
And stayed to the end. And the one win was a 21-20 win over the Jets on the road. they never won a game at home. But I stayed to the end of every game, and that's when I made my vow. I'm like, I want to stay to the end, and I want to experience this misery in all of its misery so that when the glory days finally come, I can say I earned it as a fan. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I've been at the NBA Finals this past weekend, you know, and watching the Warriors fans and everything. And, you know, it's always fun to me to watch fans of other teams, you know, and just see how they get into it, see the culture of their teams and everything. But every time I go, it makes me want to be in the Superdome. Like, I want to be a fan again right now. I want to be in the Superdome, not working, just watching the game, enjoying it with the rest of the Houdat Nation. You know?
Well, the thing is with the Saints is you know, if you're under 25, Stan, you don't really have an appreciation for how bad the Saints were. I mean, it's a long time ago. I mean, they were mediocre under Hazlitt, and they were bad under Dicka. But, I mean, the 70s and the early 80s, it's a long time ago. And they have a whole generation of Saints fans. They don't understand that, like, the Saints –
no.
They didn't win. They didn't have a winning season for 20 years. I mean, it's amazing. Before we get you out of here, Stan, I want to ask you, social media on ESPN, you know, it used to be, you know, if there's a lot of pressure on ESPN people, obviously, because you're doing millions of people, but now they have websites dedicated to screw-ups, pranks that people play, on you guys, if they did the Scott Van Pelt, somebody called in and got through. I mean, how does that change what you do now as opposed to when you were at Channel 6, maybe? The social media aspect of it?
You know, I mean, look, I try not to walk around paranoid about stuff like that. Like, you know, if somebody gets you, hey, man, they got you, you know? But, you know, I try not to walk around paranoid. I mean, I'm a normal person who does normal person things, who just happens to work on television. And I think most people understand that. You know, there's some people who don't. But, you know, you can be a quote-unquote target at times. But, you know, but some of that is so dramatic sometimes. I think it's kind of overblown. I mean, I hear people, you know, and I don't know if it makes them feel more important or it makes them feel more famous or whatever, you know. But I'm like, I'm a regular person, so I don't ever assume somebody's out to get me or somebody's out to, you know, like, you know, who has time for that, you know? So I don't really worry about it. I mean, I deal with incidents as they come up, as they happen, but, you know, it's no way to live walking around worried about stuff all the time. Like, you know, we were in Oakland, you know, for the NBA Finals this past weekend, and there were some incidents in Oakland, like people breaking in cars and stealing cameras and stuff from media people, you know? And, you know, in general, I think if you just don't take yourself too seriously, interact with people the right way, and you know, that stuff goes a long way. And then, you know, you just have to be aware of things. But I just, you know, I don't subscribe to the paranoia aspect of it where, like, you know, people are out to get you or anything like that.
All right, Stan.
But I can talk. Thank you.
No, we gave us way more time than we expected. I'm going to give you five, you and Andrew, five rapid-fire Saints questions. It's over-under, so let's go. Brandon Cooks, over-under, 1,100 yards.
Over.
I worry about durability with him, but I'm going to say over. It's breakout season.
Ingram, over-under, 1,000 yards.
Under.
I'm going to say under two. I think from I think what you saw last year is about maxed out for Ingram.
All right, next two questions are, to me, the biggest two questions on offense. C.J. Spiller, over, under 70 catches?
Under.
I'm going to say way over.
Ooh. Josh Hill, over, under 50 catches?
That's the number I knew you were going to come with. I'm going to say over.
I like over. I like it.
And final one, Saints D, over, under 42.5 sacks.
If the kid from Washington comes along as quickly as it seems he could, I'm still going to go under. I'm still going to go under. I just don't think they got
it. All right, and final one, over, under 9.5 wins.
Over.
I'm going over. I think they're going to surprise some people this year, and the NFC South is still weak.
And final question, Stan. I know you get this probably 100 times a day, but Neil Everett, he's not on Twitter. We have $80 that we raised from a campaign to get us a new computer for this podcast. We have $80 left over. I will donate it to Neil's favorite charity if he gets on Twitter.
Well, he always told me, I'm going to wait until people start getting paid to be on Twitter, and then I'm going to do it. And I said, well, look, they're already – I'm sure Kim Kardashian gets paid to be on Twitter. I said, so all you got to do is just build up your profile so where you have as many followers as her, and boom, you're in there. People will pay you to tweet, you know? So I'm going to talk to them about it.
Well, you think
– Well, you know, but going back to things, let me just say one more thing about the Saints. The only thing I'm worried about is that third receiver. Who's – is it going to be Shontavious Jones? Is it going to be – Nick Toon finally? Is it going to be Brandon Coleman? Who's going to step up and be that third receiver? I think that's the big hole because,
you know. Not getting Colston, Greg Jennings was tough.
Yeah, I mean, Colston and Cooks, I mean, that's a good starting point. But if one of those young guys can really become a significant contributor, I mean, that could really take that offense to the next level because if you think about it, you know, you got to think seriously if you're a defense coordinator about who you want covering Cooks. You almost certainly need to put your fastest corner on Cooks, okay? And then you got to be real careful with who Spiller's finding out of the backfield. Probably don't want a linebacker there. You may not even want a safety there. So you may need your number two corner to keep an eye on Spiller, okay? So then you get to Colston with maybe your third cover guy, who he can beat.
Yeah.
And then if one of these young guys get and they're getting your fourth cover guy, then that's going to cause all kinds of problems because then you got to deal with Josh Hill.
Then
you got to deal with Ben Watson.
Stan, do you feel good enough about the Saints' third or fourth receiver to pick them in fantasy?
I don't play fantasy football because if I did, my whole team would be the Saints. So, I mean, it's like...
What's wrong with that?
I mean, look, let's say...
Stan, I'll tell you, I have a non-negotiable. I don't pick Falcons, no matter what.
That's always my example. Let's say I'm playing fantasy football, and Julio Jones is right there for the picking, and it makes perfect sense for my team.
Pass.
I can't do that.
Pass.
I cannot do it. I can't root for anybody else, but especially not Falcons. Can't do it.
See, this people never doubt this man's Saints bona fides. This man is a diehard New Orleanian to the core. Stan, thanks so much.
I didn't even know he went to every home game.
It's a 1 in 15 year.
That's impressive.
You should get like a sports purple heart for that. That is.
No, here's the other thing. I had to catch the bus because my dad was like, I'm not paying good money to go see that.
Wow.
And so he had a one-man protest, and I'd be like, Dad, really? He's like, so I had to catch the bus. You know, and so I would catch the bus, but it was a highlight of my week. I mean, because, you know, like, in New Orleans, I mean, you know, we're a small town disguised as a big city. And so when there's an NFL game there and we're playing the Giants, hey, man, we're just as important as New York. Or we're playing the 49ers. We're just as important as San Francisco. Like, you guys don't have anything on us. You got a team. We got a team. Your team's probably going to kill us, but still, we got a team.
What's your last question, I promise? For your first Saints memory that you have in your head?
I just remember I was a kid watching at a relative's house, and I just remember Alvin Maxson running the ball, running back. He was there like in the early 70s. And I just remember Alvin. I think that was the first game that I actually sat down and watched. And Alvin Maxson had a really good game. I'm like, man, I like that guy, you know. And then I just got hooked. I might have been like 5 or 6 at the time. And then I think when I was maybe like 6 or 7, my mom got me a Saints uniform, helmet, and everything, you know. And I can't tell you how many backyard touchdowns I scored for the Saints in that uniform. And when I outgrew it, I mean. I was ridiculous. I mean, I outgrew it, but I like still wanted to wear it, you know. And I just got hooked at that young age. I mean, and it really influenced my career choice because, you know, I realized early on sports was a thing for me. And then, you know, I got to St. Aug, and I realized I was never going to play for the Saints, let alone I was never going to play for St. Aug, really. and so I probably wasn't ever going to play for the Saints or LSU either, you know. But it's always been my thing. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm a rational human being with the exception of the Saints and golf. Other than that, I'm a perfectly rational human being. But, you know, those are my two obsessions.
Stan, I can't thank you enough. You gave us way more time than we asked for. We may even ask you back when the Saints are undefeated in October and Leonard Fournette is the Heisman leader.
But that sounds good to me. That sounds
thanks,
great.
Stan.
Anytime,
appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
Anytime.
Thanks.
All right.
We are joined now by Dave Cariello and Kevin Held. The Saints, normally on June, don't have any news. But we talk full of Saints news today. Kevin, I'm going to start with Junior Gallette. Just when you thought he couldn't be any dumber. He maybe topped himself. Your thoughts on the Junior Gallette Instagram? Hopefully,
dude. Look. I watched this thing again before we started recording, and because of our technical issues, that gave me a chance to watch it about 6 more times. First of all, this thing looks like it was shot and recorded, and played back.
Flip phone.
On a goddamn 1986 Betamax, for Christ's sake.
Zapruder.
I mean, no. It makes the Zapruder film look like IMAX, for Christ's sake. And then second of all, I can barely understand what the hell him and his buddies are yelling at. I mean, I know they cuss.
That shit needs to come with subtitles.
Right, like, I don't understand it. I don't understand what they're yelling at.
Who is slapping their baby?
My wife is pumped. The Astros just tied the game.
I mean, does it look stupid? Yeah. But, fuck, I don't know. I mean, I can't hear him making any threats. So I don't fucking know. I don't know what he's at. What am I supposed to be mad at? Him acting like an idiot? Eh. I don't know.
Dave, I fought with people on Twitter when he may or may not have a pec injury. And people were like, it'll be fine. He's not that good. Sacks don't matter. And I was like, the dude has 25% of the Saints' sacks the last 2 years. The Saints struggle sacking the quarterback. And people are arguing with me that it's going to be fine. They'll just scheme it away if he's injured. How much does people hating on Junior Gallette have to do with we just don't like the guy?
I think he's definitely lost a good bit of love with Saints fans this offseason. You know, between the domestic violence incident that wasn't, wasn't charged.
Allegedly.
You know, the alleged, no criminal charges were filed, and then getting injured and possibly needing season-ending surgery, and getting three opinions, and then posting this nonsensical Instagram video, which, by the way, I think, Kevin hit the nail on the head. I mean, I don't know what I'm supposed to be getting mad at. I mean, some of his friends are saying "fuck Sean." We're assuming they're referring to Sean Payton.
Should be Sean Puffy Combs.
It should be Sean Pamphilon. I think we're making a little bit of a mountain out of a molehill. I mean,
look, I agree. If they meant Pamphilon, then I wholeheartedly agree
could
with
be Sean
Knight. Posse.
You don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
or, yeah, Sean Knight would be another excellent candidate.
Could be Sean John.
They didn't mean Pamphilon, but I mean, Gallette needs to stop hanging out with these guys if he's really going to take this shit seriously. He's definitely not talking about Sean Kemp. I'm one of those Saints fans. I think where it's just like I'm losing respect for the guy.
But damn.
And if he winds up playing the season, if he doesn't have season-ending surgery, and he goes out there and he plays well, then obviously all is going to be forgiven. But right now, I still don't think he's done enough.
No, see, I disagree with that. I think anything short of him breaking the all-time NFL sack record, this is Gallette's final season
but
on
here,
the Saints.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing with – I get you don't like him. I get that he's a knucklehead. And he shouldn't be kept. I get all that, Andrew, but you're our roster guy, break the film down guy, and I'll acquiesce to your thoughts. But my thought is this: the Saints suck at getting to the quarterback. Okay.
Yep.
Gallette is their best pass rusher they have the last 2 years. That's not arguable. If you want to argue sacks don't matter, if you want to argue this or that, he's the best pass rusher they have. Don't tell me they sucked with him. They won't be any worse without him. That's bullshit. They need Gallette to get them 10 sacks. If he's a guy that's going to be injured for most of the year or whatever, this team, you just add another question of, who's going to get to the quarterback on third down to the other six questions we have about the Saints?
Yeah, no, I think it would be like saying we just went 7-9 with Drew Brees, so losing Drew Brees wouldn't be that big of a deal, right? I mean, that's what I equate that to. I mean, you can remove – you have a mediocre season, and then you can make the argument that you remove – the best asset of that team, and it wouldn't hurt that bad. But the point is, it can always get worse. It can potentially get much worse.
And scheme can't fix everything. That's what.
Yeah, but
say.
But the one point I'll make about this is that I agree with you, Ralph, and I think you can't separate what a guy does on the field. And there is some locker room stuff. You know, there's some other stuff where Gallette is maybe a problem, and so you got to evaluate that too. But you cannot separate a guy's you have to separate a guy's ability on the field versus your personal feelings about him as a person. And regardless of how any of us feel about Gallette, I personally don't love the guy. That doesn't mean he's a bad football player. Those are separate things.
All right.
And but I will say this: I think you look at the draft and you look at who the Saints have picked up this offseason with Anthony Spencer, Kikaha, Davis Tull. I still think they need Gallette, and I still think this defense is better off with him on the field. But I think with the moves they've made, they are more set up to absorb him being gone, if not this year, certainly in the future as those guys develop, than they were last year.
Yeah.
And so I think if you compare those two, you know, that's one thing where hopefully a year from now they can let him go.
All right, fun question, Kevin. I'll start with you. How many sacks does Junior Gallette have to go from the fans thinking he's an ass to thinking he's eccentric again?
Huh. What did he have last year?
10.
Oh, he's got to eclipse 10 without question. I'd say like 14.
Dave.
At least 10. I would say 12, and the fans would forgive him and just think he's a little nutty.
Andrew, how many sacks did
he have? Yeah, I think it's two pronged. I don't think it's just sacks. I think he's got to get more than 10, so I think it's got to be like 15. But it has to be coupled. 15. But it has to be coupled with team success. You know, in other words, if he has a 15-sack season but the Saints suck again, then they're just going to be like, oh, just get rid of Gallette. It doesn't matter anyway. So, I think he has soured people on his attitude so much that now his only saving grace is a monster season statistically combined with the team winning.
I think you're right, Andrew, but I think if the team wins and he doesn't get at least – a dozen sacks, people are going to
still hate him.
Like he's got to get 12 sacks, and he's got to and they got to be like
he needs to get the mother load.
Yeah, and he's
it's only hope.
And the thing is with him, his knuckleheadness, like he doesn't like the Saints can't cut him now or trade him now because it'll decimate their cap. But man,
that's the only reason he's on this team is his contract.
He's got not too much rope. Like he might even be a guy where if he would have 11 sacks this year or 12, the Saints might look to ship him out.
Yeah.
You know.
They already tried to this offseason.
All right. Dave, the Saints re-signed Cameron Jordan. Your thoughts on the deal he got?
I was really surprised that they gave him such a long-term, big money contract, and I guess they know him better than I do, and obviously we all hope that's true. But I just don't see that kind of money out on the field. I don't see him playing like that. Is he good? Yeah. Is he one of the Saints' better defensive players? Yeah. But I don't think he's ever been a dominant. Well, 2 years ago he had a great season, but I mean last season he certainly was a dominating defensive guy on the line. I mean, you're getting paid that kind of money, you need to be dominating, you need to be getting double teams and you need to be getting game plan for, and you need to be getting 15 sacks a year on a regular basis, or at least 12 sacks a year. And how many sacks did he have last year?
7.5.
Yeah, I mean, you're giving the guy $60 million for 5 years. I didn't get it. When I read that news, my immediate response was, really?
Kevin, before I get to Andrew, who's just going to destroy,
really?
Andrew's just waiting to destroy Dave on this. I can feel the rage. But Kevin, what did you think of the contract?
How much is it again? 60?
60 for 5 years, 30.
I think it's 55 for six, but it could escalate if he hits like incentives.
I guess I look at it like a couple of days ago, and you'll have to pardon me. I'm fighting a cold here. A couple of days ago, I'm listening to the radio, and guys are talking about, you know, baseball players, because really in this town, that's all they fucking talk about. The Blues could be in the Stanley Cup Finals now, and they'll find a way to pivot it into the goddamn Cardinals. But anywho, it becomes, oh, why is this pitcher and why is that pitcher? How did this guy get a $100 million deal? He only won like 15 games or whatever. And somebody raised the point that the market and times have changed. That if you hit certain things, if you hit certain markers, and these are markers that are not what we would look at as phenomenal, but if you hit certain markers and you're proven to be, you know, tough and durable, and you can get certain things done, that when the time comes, the team would rather overpay you than to send you away and have to worry and have to scramble to find, you know, in the case of a pitcher, another starter. So in the case of Cameron Jordan, it's they'd rather overpay probably to hang on to him than let him go
to another team. Possibly Atlanta. Andrew, the floor is yours.
No, I think it was...
Hang on, guys. I have to call the police. I think I'm hearing somebody getting shot in the alley behind my house.
Oh, is that a joke?
No, I shit you not.
Jesus Christ, Held. Move, for Christ's sake.
Well, first videotape it and then call the cops.
Lock yourself in the closet. We may have had our first murder on the show.
I don't know if you should be joking about that.
I don't
that.
Know. It's not. It's only funny because it might not be true.
Should I keep going
or should we? I don't know how to segue back to the Cam Jordan contract.
Well, no.
Andrew was supposed to be ripping me a new one.
He was.
I don't know if after. I don't know, the corpse in Kevin's alleyway. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can summon the fire inside of me again. But no, I think with Jordan, the main thing is there's no situation where he's a liability on the field, regardless of the assignment, regardless of the down, regardless of the distance. He can be in the game. Mm-hmm. You can ask him to rush the passer. You can ask him to stop the run. You can ask him to hold the line of scrimmage up, take on a double team, bat down a pass. He's got so many skills in his game and no clear weaknesses. There's very few players in the NFL that fit that description. And I think Dave, you're not seeing the whole picture. I think there's you look at the elite pass rushers.
You're basically saying he's mediocre. You're basically saying he's a
not at all. I'm saying he's a good. He's very good at everything he does.
He has a lot of skills, but he's master at none.
He's an elite run defender. He's an elite run defender. He's an elite run defender, 3-4 end.
And
here's the thing, Dave. If
elite.
Yes.
You're throwing out a term like elite with a guy that had seven.
But
and
that's
a half
not. But that's.
But that's exactly it, Dave. You're like every other fan that goes to the box score and looks at stats. How many sacks did he have last year? And takes that as the measure of how good a defensive end is.
Here's the question for you, Dave.
How well did the Saints do at stopping the run? Where did they finish as far as?
He's one player. Go ahead,
Dave. I guess here's the question for you. If you don't think he's worth 5 for 55 or 5 for 60, would you be okay if he had 13 sacks, or let's not even do 13, if he had 11 sacks, which wouldn't even be a career high, if he had 11 sacks this year and played the run like he's done his whole career, and oh, by the way, never missed a start, availability is a huge deal in the NFL, would you be okay with him going to Atlanta for $80 million and $42 million guaranteed? Because that's what he'd get, and I guarantee Atlanta would fall over themselves. Like,
Do you think that Atlanta would sign him for $80 million?
Dave, he's an elite runner.
How much did that guy for Minnesota, I forget his name, how much?
Everson Griffin?
Yeah, how much did he get?
He got $24 million guaranteed.
And what's the best season he's ever had? Like 8 sacks?
8.5 sacks.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is...
Dude, good defensive ends that can do it all, like, they don't exist in this league,
here's
Dave.
Here's the thing, too, Dave. He hasn't missed a start, and I know you're like, well, he hadn't missed a start. But the thing is, that makes him, in the Saints' eyes...
No, that's valuable.
In the Saints' eyes and other teams' eyes, they say, you know what? We can overpay a little, because he's going to be healthy all the time. So worst-case scenario is he's not quite what we hope for, but he's going to be a really good, solid starter every week.
He's not a guy that's just going to set the world on fire, but you need – if you had five guys on your defense like him, you would have a dominant defense. And the bottom line is he's a productive player. He's not going to carry your defense, okay? So you still need good linebackers. You still need good coverage guys. He's not going to do it all on his own. But I go back to my point. You look at the elite pass rushers, there's just no one is built like J.J. Watt except J.J. Watt. If you look at the elite pass rushers, they can't play the run. You look at the elite run defenders, they can't rush the passer. He can do both. There's nothing out there in the league. You could count them on one hand, the guys that have his skills and his versatility.
Well, Dave, what do you think would have been fair for him then?
I'm not sold. I have no idea. I haven't looked at contracts of other defensive ends around the league. What is J.J. Watt get paid?
He's basically Cam Jordan's contract is the third most guaranteed money. He's behind J.J. Watt.
Mario Williams.
No, he's behind J.J. Watt. Well, yeah, Mario Williams. I guess J.J. Watt, Mario Williams, and the guy for the L.A. The Rams.
Oh, Robert Quinn.
Yeah, Quinn.
Yeah.
Those three guys are to me, they're on another level. They're on a higher level, and I'm not saying. I'm just not convinced. I'm really not convinced. You know, if he's getting paid that high, he should be carrying a defense, as Andrew put
it.
You're paying all this money to a guy who's not going to carry your defense.
But the bottom line, Dave, is that you're retaining a good player, and no player in the NFL is compensated fairly. You know, most guys that are paid contracts like these never live up to them, and most guys that make really poor contracts are underpaid. And that's just the reality of the NFL, but you want to be in a business of retaining key players that are good.
The only way I think this contract is a disaster is if he gets injured.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that you can't predict. I mean, the thing that makes the
– The thing – but if he duplicates 2012 this year, then – this contract was a steal because he would have gotten way more than that on the open market.
Oh, you mean 2013.
Yeah, sorry, 2013. If he duplicates that season, his Pro Bowl year, then on an open market, if he doesn't get franchise tagged, he would have weighed way more than this contract.
Yeah, I mean, like
– If he duplicates his 2013 season, then that's the kind of play that I would be fine with getting this kind of money.
But he's already done that.
Once, but I'm not so sure that he's the kind of guy who's going to continue to do that for years and years.
What about this, Dave?
But it's not like a Will Smith thing, or I mean, it could be, but it's not like Charles Grant or Will Smith where he's had weight issues. Like that, he's in good shape. He keeps his weight at it. He to me, he's less of a warning sign than a Charles Grant who gets fat and happy.
Dave, would you be okay?
I don't think Cameron Jordan is in any danger of being overweight.
Well, Dave, let me ask you
this. You can't predict injury, but I think from a weight perspective, you know, he's a guy that will be able to maintain that.
Let me ask you this, Dave. What if he? Let's say he doesn't. I think 2013 is a little bit high for him as far as sacks. And what if he the next 2 years, Dave, starts every game, plays his normal. Very good to elite against the run and has 18 sacks, 9 each year. Would that be enough for you to say, that's a pretty good contract?
That's like really kind of on the cusp there, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Well, I guess that may be true. You know, my biggest thing out of all of that, really, and I think what's most important, is the playing every game. I mean, staying healthy. That's such a rarity in the NFL, and that definitely adds value to a contract because you get the most out of him.
Held back. What's going on in St. Louis, Kevin?
No clue. Just heard a bunch of shots.
Great.
And
seriously, so, we need to start a GoFundMe.
How do you know it wasn't fireworks?
We need because it's June.
It's fucking June. June 8th.
We need a GoFundMe. We need to do a GoFundMe to get Held out of his dilapidated neighborhood that he lives in. Held, how much money do you need to get out from under this shack that you purchase?
Or at least purchase a panic room.
Yeah.
Well, no, I have a basement, so, you know. I mean, that's, you know, I'm okay in that regard. I'm doing all right. Like, I'll be all right. If I eliminate my debt, I will be able to sell the house and move out of this neighborhood.
All right. Well, this isn't the Dave Ramsey show.
Before
let's move on.
Before 2020.
Before 2020. Before 20. Yes. It'll be before 2020.
Right. Andrew, we got to finish up the bracket of the best Peyton draft pick ever.
Yeah.
Where are we?
We're in the finals, baby. This is it.
Who is it? I forget.
Jari Evans against Marcus Colston.
I vote Colston.
I vote Colston.
Dave.
All right. Good. I was worried that this was like going to be a 2-2 vote, and we were going to have somebody on Twitter decide our entire contest. But definitely Colston. He leads the Saints in points for a non-kicker, points scored. He's the franchise touchdown leader. He's the franchise receiving yards leader. Jari Evans is a great guard. He's made the Pro Bowl many years over. But Marcus Colston has been those once-in-a-lifetime players and once-in-a-lifetime wide receivers, and he's done it all and been the anti-Junior Gallet.
I saw something Saints tweeted out that he had the fourth most touchdowns since 06. And it was like the four people above him were like surefire Hall of Famers. It was like Gates, Fitzgerald, right, and somebody else. I can't remember.
He has quietly just, done his job and been one of the best players. One of the best receivers I think the NFL has ever seen. And he was drafted.
Oh, God, come on.
Fourth. Come on what? He's a great receiver.
The best receiver the NFL has never ever seen. He's never been to a Pro Bowl.
One of.
How can he be the best receiver the NFL has ever seen when he hasn't even been the best receiver in the league any year since he's been in the NFL?
No. He's
making a Pro Bowl. Well, I say one of. I didn't say how many.
That's ridiculous.
Well, let me ask you.
I love Colston more than anyone, but the best receiver the league has ever seen, he hasn't even been the best receiver ever one year.
Wait. I didn't say the best. I said one of the best. There have been thousands and thousands of players.
What's your sample size? He's not
40,
one of the one,
40.
He's not a top 40, no.
Well,
no.
Let me ask you this, Andrew.
Oh,
I know he's never been to a Pro Bowl.
No.
But let me ask you this. If he can have a Reggie Wayne late season revival,
mm-hmm,
and let's say he can put up in the next 3 years, if he can put up 3,100 yards and he can catch 25 more touchdowns, mm-hmm, that'll put him at almost 100 touchdowns. I think that would put him at 94. Could he be an Art Monk type Hall of Famer where he gets a late push if the Saints would win another title?
I don't think so. I think the Hall of Fame weighs really heavily your resume. I think that wins matter the most. So I think, if you've won Super Bowls, that matters. So if you were to win a second one, that would help.
And be Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, Super Bowl MVP, obviously. But then I think Pro Bowl is kind of the second thing on the resume. So I think it's going to be hard for him to make it if he doesn't get to at least one. But, most of these guys that are making Pro Bowls, Will Shields, the guard, I think he finally got in this year. He might not even be in yet. And he's been to, 12 Pro Bowls as a guard?
Jari Evans has been to, 6?
He's been to 6. So I just think it's very hard to get into the Hall of Fame unless you're putting up, all-world numbers. I just look at the guys that are in there, Isaac Bruce and Marvin Harrison and Jerry Rice and Steve Largent. I just don't put him in that league. And that's nothing against Colston. I love the guy. He's awesome. Probably the best Saints receiver in history. But he is a little bit of a product of the Drew Brees, Sean Payton offense. And that's nothing against him. But he's never been to a Pro Bowl. And I think he's been the master of consistency, and he's done a really good job of being durable and keeping his body healthy and all that stuff. But he's just been steady. He's always kind of hovered around the 80 catch, 1,000 yard season, and he's never really gone above that. He's never had one of those monster seasons. 100 catches for 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns, and that's what I consider kind of the elite receivers. That kind of.
So it's Colston is the best draft pick.
Well, my vote is Jari Evans. I'm just gonna say, I think he gets the raw deal here because of the position he plays. I think people don't He's an offensive lineman. He's a guard, so people just don't see the stats. We're in a fantasy football era where we look at numbers and we look at the box score and we see how many catches Colston had, and we just assume that, you know, he's way better than Jarry Evans, because it's difficult for the average football fan, and that, for me too. I mean, it's hard to really magnify what an offensive lineman does. But I just think you look at Jarry Evans, Marcus Colston has never been the best. He's never been better than Megatron. He's never been better than Larry Fitzgerald in his prime. Jarry Evans, for at least a short time, was the best guard in the NFL, arguably the best offensive lineman in the NFL. And I think if you look at offensive linemen, he was closer to being a Drew Brees of his position than Colston was. And so I think if you compare the two, they're the two best picks of the Sean Payton era without question. There's a reason they were seeded 1 and 2. But for me, 6 Pro Bowls, for me, this was an easy choice for Evans.
Well, it's Colston. But I made an impassioned plea, Andrew. I give you that.
But, hey, Colston's a great player, and I'm happy he won.
All right.
That's all. He deserves recognition.
All right. So Colston wins. Now we're gonna bang out some Twitter questions. Hopefully Held will get back, because I want to ask him this. All right, the first one. Okay, first Twitter.
You lost him again?
I lost him again. Let's see. Because all these people, they asked some great questions, and then people answered them. So in my timeline, I have to weed through people's answer. Okay, this is for you, Andrew. This is from Sports Cajun. I'm driving over 2,100 miles with two kids to go to a preseason CFL game. On a scale of 1 to 10, how crazy am I?
Well, if 10 is crazy, like certifiable, I'd put you at a 9.
Dude,
like you might need to be committed.
Dude,
2,100 miles. That's fucking far.
That's like
2 days. That's 2 whole days of driving.
Did he say 2 kids?
Yeah, 2 kids to a CFL.
How old are the kids?
That's the key. See,
you know what? It doesn't fucking matter.
Well, yeah, it does. Because if the kids are like 12 and 14. They'll just iPod.
Then they're gonna be back there annoying the shit out of each other.
No, you know, iPod that thing.
Oh, she touched me, and he. Oh, yeah. You gotta play.
Nah,
you definitely gotta play a movie back there.
If it's like a 12 and a 15-year-old, and they're like both girls or both boys, it could be not that difficult. You know, but if it's like a 4 and a 2-year-old, then that's just not safe.
Look, if you lived 100 miles from a Canadian city having a CFL preseason game, I would say you're insane to drive to it.
Come on, kids, I'm packing up the wagon. We're going to see the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I mean, that's banana towns.
I mean, I almost don't believe that this is actually happening.
No, it's a question. Held, are you back?
Yes. All right. And what's the question?
You're still alive.
This
good.
Is the question I saved just for you. This is from the Bitter 1-1. Which would you prefer, a 9-interception rapist or a 10-sack imbecile with no cab fare and a broken left tit?
Wait a minute.
Oh,
a 9-interception
rapist.
Or a 10-sack imbecile
with no cab fare and a broken tit. I love that question. It might be the best question ever.
I don't like the 10-sack imbecile.
It's just a joke. Would you rather have Darren Sharper and his 9 interceptions or Junior Gallette and his 10 sacks?
Junior Gallette.
That's a tough one, though.
No, it's not.
Not really.
The day is mine. I'll take the rapist.
Oh, Lord. Let's see. What other questions?
Come on. That was a Sean Connery joke.
Yeah. Can you name 5 players dumber than your – no. Can you – oh, Andrew, can you name 5 players dumber than Junior Gallette?
Yeah. Or it was just 5 people, right?
5 people.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say my 5-year-old son – when he was 2. That's one. I got 4 more. Jesus.
Yeah.
Bobby Jindal.
Bobby Jindal. Well, Ray Nagin, he's up there.
Broussard.
Yeah, yeah. Shit, we might have five in Louisiana.
Yeah, I didn't fucking forget you, you shithead.
Rick Venturi.
Goddamn right.
I know Kevin hasn't forgotten him either. Ray Gregory. Or Randy Gregory. What was that guy's name?
Randy. Ted Gregory.
Oh,
Dave, this question's for you. And this is from Mandula.
Billy Kuharik.
Yeah.
You mean Monodula?
Monodula.
Mandula.
Mandula, whatever. And this is a touchy one, but I'm going to go there anyway. Which saint or former saint is most likely to become a woman, a.k.a. Caitlyn Jenner?
Wow. Scott Fujita?
I don't even.
I was trying to think of players with long hair.
Mike McKenzie?
Turley?
Maybe Mike McKenzie. He's already started the transition. No, I don't know. You know who my pick is? Hollis Thomas. He was always just kind of out there.
Yeah, he had a tongue ring.
Yeah,
he wore
exactly.
SpongeBob.
Yeah,
exactly. He wore SpongeBob SquarePants underwear.
Exactly. Yeah, he was, I would go with Hollis Thomas.
All right. He seems like a fun guy.
This one's for me. I'm
going with Thomas Morstead.
Oh, Lord. This one
when he was growing his hair. Or maybe Drew Brees when he was growing his hair. He kind of had that Bruce Jenner look.
What? The over-under on Ralph messing up his own kid's name. That's a tough one. This is the thing. Me and my wife were debating names. I want to go old-time names that are simple. Like
Jack.
Like Jackson or Oliver.
I'm surprised Ralph isn't naming his son Mike Detelier.
I might. You never know. Or Oliver or Maxwell. Good, sturdy, simple names. We can't go weird. But we'll see.
Please tell me your wife is lobbying for Jose.
No. No.
Or Manny.
No. actually, she said it's
I'm pretty sure Manny is short for Emmanuel.
She's okay with me having a junior and naming it Ralph Lane, which is my name, but I say I'm not worthy of having another human being named after me. So we can't go that route. So.
What about Junior?
Junior.
Winner.
No. Milky, she says, like Milky Cabrera. We'll do that in the summer. We'll have the name Ralph's baby tournament. We'll see.
Oh, that'll be great.
We'll seed that son of a gun.
Oh yeah.
And we'll have my wife come in and she can interject.
She will be the one to break all ties.
How high of a seed do you think Tabucky will be?
Oh, he's like a 12 seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Pamphilon now, bro?
my favorite new site is the Baby Name Wizard. It tracks the popularity of a name the last 100 years, and it tells you like what year a certain name peaked. The name Ralph peaked in like 1917.
Of course it did.
Of course.
During the Woodrow Wilson administration.
And you've been behind the times ever since.
Any saints say?
Says the guy who's never seen Scarface.
Yeah. Any Saint Stations to come on the podcast next? Can we hook her up with Kevin if he goes dating again?
Oh, God.
Kevin.
Yes, we can.
Kevin. So if
yes, we can.
Kevin, if Goodell replaces the lawyer in any lawyer joke, who does Gillette replace?
The Polish.
Yeah, there we go. That's a good idea. The Polish. I'll go with
that. Are you on the market, Kevin, or is the lovely lady we had on the podcast officially taking you off of dating sites?
I am not on dating sites, but here's the thing. this is a short-term thing because she's moving at the end of the summer.
You're committed until she leaves?
Until August.
And she can't stay over at your place because it's a flop house.
No. The house itself is fine. Just, you know, it's what's outside the house that's not so fine.
All right. This podcast,
we should have a sensation on here.
We should. We had Stan Verrett, and we had a possible homicide. So, I mean, this show, it's the greatest podcast we've ever had, I think.
Yeah, what the fuck? How the fuck did y'all land Stan Verrett? What is Stan Verrett doing coming in here? Hanging with the two of you.
Because he's a crazy lunatic Saints fan, and he wanted to as an ESPN anchor, all he gets to do is read highlights and do news. With us, he got to be a crazy Saints fan for 20 minutes.
Oh, God bless him, man.
It was longer. It was almost 30 he gave us.
Look at that. That's commitment right there.
It is commitment.
That guy loves the Saints.
Did you guys ask him to, like, record a bumper or anything?
Oh, we should have.
Damn
it.
God.
We are not.
See, this is why y'all need to consult me on this.
I know. Damn. They go right into it, and they do no research. They don't talk about it.
We're going to have him back in the fall.
Yeah. We're gonna
fine. Bumpers. Bumpers. Every guest going forward. Every guest. I don't care if it's fucking Steve from down the street who runs a fucking taco stand on Magazine Street that Dave fucking likes, and this guy has stories about how he used to sell programs back at Tulane Stadium back in the late 60s. They're doing bumpers. Everybody
tomorrow's
does
taco
bumpers.
Tuesday. We should have Sean Pamplong do a bumper for us. That could probably happen.
It probably would. He'd probably do a bumper in 25 minutes on this podcast for a Mexican pizza from Taco Bell. All right. I guess that's it for this podcast. So
that's all the questions we had?
That's all the questions we had, I think. And we're this podcast is like at 80 minutes almost.
Yep.
All right.
So go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got –
congratulations to Marcus Colston.
Yeah. Congratulations to Marcus Colston. Go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got articles and stuff. Go to Canal Street Chronicles. Dave has his many minions writing, turning out content. And Kevin, I don't know, he's not on OKQ, but he's not on Tinder. He's on Twitter.
In your dreams.
And
he might do a power pool.
He might. We can only
ways to die. Ways to die in the Midwest.
Oh my God. Kevin, don't go near the chalk outline. The cops get very antsy there. I don't want to see you tased. You know? So for Andrew, for Dave, for Kevin, I'm Ralph. Until next week, be well.
Don't tase me, bro!